Addie, before we go on to talk about the Warriors, I'd like to go back and talk about some things that were on the tape last time we talked.
Oh, real fun.
And one of the things that I didn't ask you was what your father's job was on the railroad.
He was a foreman in the repair shops at San Bernardino. Machinist.
Is that what he did the entire time he was with the railroad?
The entire time. Mm-hmm. Yes, he was always there in the repair shop, and I think he was hurt a couple of times. I can't remember it exactly, but not during the time that I remember his working there. No, he was working there when I was born, and he stayed with that until he died. And he just came home one day and from work. He hadn't been to work more than a couple of hours when he came home, and 2 days later he was dead. It was the flu plus the heart condition. So that was so quick, and it, you know, it was kind of a shattering experience. But we got a pass, and we could go to San Diego to see my relatives there, which at that, those later years after grandmother and grandfather were gone, it was just my uncles. And only one of them was married, the other was a bachelor. And they were out in the mines. They never moved to town.
You said that your mother was not well, really. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, after your father died, who took care of things?
Well,
what did she do?
Like I said, my father's brother had lived with us ever since before I was born. And I never knew him to work, but he had quite a bit of money, and he paid my mother board and room, always did. And so he just kept on with that setup. And like I said, I went home after I married. I went home every week and cleaned her house, bought her groceries, made her clothes. And my sister would go pretty often too. But she had the children, and of course my mother was always glad to see her come, but she was always happy to see her go. And then the two brothers that lived there in town, my oldest brother just had the one little girl, and his wife was very fond of my mother, and she'd go down and every evening, and they'd spend the evenings with her. And so she wasn't all that alone. And like my niece always said, it was so nice that she and her mother had a place to go. And my brother was in the lodge, and he had other business things to do too. Well, he was... there was a kind of a musical troupe there with the Santa Fe. I don't remember what they called it. And they used to come to the house and practice. My brother was, in a quartet, and they sang, and I played the piano for them. and of course, after I was married and moved to Los Angeles, my sister-in-law played the piano, and then Rosalind, incidentally, is my niece. She's incidentally Rosalind Carter, and she played the piano, and she got so she, you know, she was real good at accompanying them. She was a little girl, but she still was getting the experience. And, of course, my mother had this hernia that they couldn't operate on. That was the cause of her being, her illness. And well, she nearly died every time she'd have an attack with a hernia, but they couldn't operate. Just like I said, she just could look at a broom and it would bring on this attack. And she wasn't faking any. She really was a sick woman. And this, of course, was too many children. That was the basic problem.
You wanted to tell me some more about what you did when you were in the mountains.
We were supposed to go around and gather up firewood, not only for the campfire at night, but for the cooking. And we just cooked over. We had rocks piled up on each side and a grate over it. And that was where we cooked. Very primitive. Very enjoyable. And then we went hunting. We had squirrel and rabbit. And of course, I was allowed to carry the gun. I was never allowed to shoot. It was all with my brothers who did that.
Did they say why, that you weren't allowed to shoot?
I was a girl. but I could carry the gun. It was heavy. And I did, just so I could go. And we gathered the wood. The youngest one, of course, carried the smaller pieces, and the older one dragged the bigger pieces. And then there was an old prospector up there, and he'd go on these little tours hunting for gold, and we'd go with him, a whole bunch of them. There was an old cabin site up there. The cabins were all deteriorated and fallen down, but some of the structure was still there, and I think it was up above Baldwin Lake somewhere. And he'd get his gold, and then he'd take it back to the stream, and pan it out. And so we learned how to pan gold, which is fun. Oh, I think for years I had a little vial of it, but I don't remember whatever happened to it. And then we'd just go on hikes and just looking. Go around the lake. Sometimes we'd fish. And we didn't have regular fishing poles. We just had an old stick. But
did you catch things?
It was fun. Oh, yeah, we caught trout, and trout mostly. We could even see them in the streams. The streams were so brisk, and you could see the trout when they were swimming around. It was fun watching them. But we'd see the bait, and we'd drop in, and the hook, mostly hook, we would see them dart around that. To investigate before they bite. And sometimes you bite, sometimes you wouldn't. And now we'd take them home, we'd have them eat. And then at night, we'd have to have the campfire because no lights, for one thing, and for another, it was cold. And we used to speculate on the ants. They had these great big black ants, and they were in that wood. And of course, when they catch fire, the older ones would say, "Now see what it's like to be trapped in a fire." It was a lesson that kind of stuck. And as a matter of fact, everything we did was more or less a lesson in survival. And we'd go around and we'd see these ant nests. Some of them were around 5 feet high. Little tiny twigs, bigger than the ant. And they were just all piled up. I've been up there in recent years and I haven't seen any. They must have been burned off the forest fires or something. But it was always a good lesson. And they were almost very, very sure there was it was dead wood. It wasn't live wood. And so that there weren't the sparks to fly. And it was all very cleared off. There was nothing around that was inflammable. And there used to be, we warmed the rocks by that, put them in bed with it. They could keep warm. Now that was in the summertime, and it was cold. It was cold at night. And of course, sleeping in a tent wasn't too warm anyway. And then there were a lot of berries around. We found wild gooseberries and elderberries, and of course, manzanita, the little apples. And my mother used to have us gather them. There weren't very many, but a few. And she'd make jelly of them all over this little grave. When I think back, what that woman must have gone through. So, she was game. She taught us a lot. She taught us how to get along. Never to complain.
It seems like she did a lot in spite of her.
Oh, yeah. She talked all the time. My mother was just the greatest talker. I'm more like my father, quiet. She did the talking, he did the listening, and they made a good team. So,
was this campsite an organized campsite, like an established camp?
Well,
or was it?
No, each year we'd probably have a different one. But finally, one of the families proved up on the claim. And Rathburns, and they built a big home. And in one of the fires, right, it burned down. But there was a couple of springs around there. And we used to put our fresh vegetables, like our watermelon and our butter and all that, in the spring. It was just ice cold. It made your teeth hurt. To drink from it. So, and that was our refrigeration. Well, we seem to get along. Sometimes I wonder with all these new improvements and new gadgets we've got, how we did manage to keep the food from spoiling, but it never did. None of us were ever sick. No. Oh, I guess it must have been good organization all the way through. Well, of course, since my mother had grown up in the 1800s, naturally they didn't have anything much. I guess they had nice enough homes and all that, but certainly nothing like she enjoyed those last years. She had an electric refrigerator, and they were just new then, but she lived a much easier life after my father's death, really, than she had before, because she wanted to do the things he wanted to do.
Well, how much education did your parents have?
Oh, my father was University of Illinois graduate. He had taught school, but he never liked that. And my mother was graduate from a Catholic school there in Illinois.
Did she have any college?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think right after she finished college, as a matter of fact, she was sent to this Catholic school for girls. But her brother graduated in the same class that William Jennings Bryan graduated in. Oh, yes, they all had college education.
Was there a lot of encouragement and support for you children then to
go
to school?
Yes, they insisted we go to school. Oh, yes. And we all were encouraged to go to school. However, my oldest brother got tired of school. He didn't graduate from high school. He thought he was adult when he was 14, and he got tired of the way we were living, so he joined the army, and he wrote back to my parents and told them not to try and get him out. He was 14. He said he was 18. And he wrote back and he said he didn't want them to try and get him out. He wanted to learn discipline. And my father said, "Now what? What do you suppose I was trying to teach him?" And so he stayed in the Army cavalry 4 years. And as soon as, I think he was in there about a year, maybe less, then they sent him to the Philippines. And he was in the Philippines the remainder of his enlistment. And I guess he must have been scared to death because he wrote 10-page letters home. And he never cried about anything. But there was homesickness in his letters, so my mother always read. And when he came back, he was ready to settle down. He went into Santa Fe as an apprentice, and he stayed there in his entire working years, except for those, 2 years, I believe, or three, that he worked in the Navy Yard in Vallejo because he had a family. He didn't want to go into the armed forces, so he worked in the Navy Yard, and they lived in Vallejo then. But all the other years, he worked for the Santa Fe, and he was just straight machinist. He never got to be a foreman or anything.
What were your expectations around college? I know you married young, but before that,
as a matter of fact, I just lived day to day, really and truly. When you think back on all this, you asked me about menstruation. This was something that was acceptable fact. This was what my mother said was going to happen, and so it's going to happen. And I never even thought about it as anything other than just something that is going to be, and you take it for what it's worth. And as for college, I knew I had already entered the, I'd gone into high school, but I didn't finish, not then. Yeah. But I took courses while I was in Los Angeles at night. And those times when I wasn't employed, there was layoff in the early part of the winter, and then I took correspondence course. So I graduated as accountant. Then I took other subjects. I took up art and other things too, languages. But I don't know that, I don't even remember any certificates I ever got for any of those. But I did get one as accountant. And it just never appealed to me. Accounting was just one of those, that meant you were in a little office with maybe one or two other people. And that just this wasn't my dish at all. And so I started working at the Jacoby Brothers, and I worked in the alteration room, which was constructive. And they put me into the stock room when the new things came in. Well, we had Paris models and everything. Clothes were just gorgeous, and the fabrics, oh, I loved every bit of that. So I would mark all the clothes and put them down on their worksheets, what they had, and I guess now you would call it inventory, incoming inventory. But I worked there until I resigned from that to go back to Oklahoma. And then in Oklahoma, of course, I worked for the county agent. I didn't know anything about chickens much, but I soon found out. And I found out that they gave nice prizes for prize chickens and eggs and sewing. So I went into that, too. So I would say that my education is more practical than it was, what would you say,
theoretical.
Yeah. Well, it's just more just practical, and the things that I could really use, I kind of worked at harder. And with the sewing thing, I still make all my clothes, and I can't afford what they have in the stores now. Well, being a large person, you don't get things like you on sale, never. And they always cost more than the smaller sizes.
Now, when you started to date, did you go out in groups or in double dates or single dates? I'd like to know.
I was going to tell you about that double. It wasn't double. It was more multiple than it was anything. No, I never went out on a single date, even with the man I married. Never. Not during my young years. It was always, at least 6 or 8 of us went out together. Always. And while I didn't go out that much with my husband, he wasn't there that much after I met him. But those that I grew up with, it was all a very compatible thing and very, it was supposed to be, we were supposed to go with different ones, but we'd intermix, and maybe the one I went with I wouldn't go home with, wouldn't see me to the door, that is. And the boys all of us got out and saw us to the door. So, it's been to my hour now.
What kinds of things would you do?
Well, we used to go to dances a lot. And then we'd go to different houses, and we would play cribbage, which my uncle had taught me when I was able to count. And that made arithmetic a lot easier for me. We'd play cards, and sometimes we would have guessing games. But there was always some parents around. There was never a party that we went to but the parents didn't participate to, which I don't think parents now have time for the children. And when they all came to my house, it was all with cards. We'd play whist, and we'd play cribbage. We even played pinochle. So I learned to play all of them.
But before you were married, what were your expectations of what marriage would be like? And
well,
what you would do when you were married?
Yes, I expected to have a home and have a little garden out and back. And I hoped I'd have a washing machine to do the wash in, but I didn't. I had to do it by hand. Have friends in. Well, after I was married, we lived in Los Angeles. We had lots of company. I knew a lot of people, and they'd come over from San Bernardino, and we'd go shopping together, or we'd go down and listen to Amy McPherson.
Did you do that often?
Oh, yes. She was quite an authentic character. Personage, I better say.
Tell me about going to see her.
Well, as a matter of fact, I don't think any of we saw through her line of thought. You know, it was money in the background very heavily, and we all saw through that. But she was a very magnetic person. And I don't think any of us ever thought of joining her church, but we did go, and we found it very entertaining, for one thing, and there was a lot of truth in some of the things she said. We weren't critical, none of us. Sometimes we laughed about it, make fun of it, but she herself said that she had made fun of religion. So, when we were living in Los Angeles, there again, cards and dances were the most. We all went out, my husband brought his shipmates over to the house, and sometimes their girlfriends. It was a very enjoyable thing, but I worked all the time, and there was no leisure, not just to put my feet up and say, well, this is going to be it.
Did you expect to work after you were married?
No, I didn't. But I found I had to. So I went to work. You do the things that you have to do. Not because you want to, but this is part of your life. If you want to live, you work for it. It was acceptable because I never thought that it would ever wind up in divorce. I expected to live the rest of my life with him, just as my parents had done. I expect to do the same thing. It was a bombshell, but it was a gradual thing. It wasn't all right at once. I could see year after year the deterioration, and I'd think, well, what have I done wrong? Where's my mistake? I never laid the blame on to him. And like his sister said, when she came out here, want to know if I wanted him back. And I said, no way. She says, well, Addie, do you hate him? And I said, I haven't got it in my heart to hate anyone. I just wouldn't do it.